We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, proudly presented by M-Prize Bank, your partner in possible. Coming up, the latest episode of 21 Questions, a Q&A-style show covering whatever our subscribers feel like hearing about. And it's presented by Macadoodles, your one-stop shop for beer, wine, and spirits, now in Kansas City. The latest episode of 21 Questions begins now.
What's up, Chiefs Kingdom? Welcome to this episode of 21 Questions presented by our friends over at Macadoodles. They've got the store over in Lee Summit, so if you're in the Kansas City area, need to stock up on your latest beer, wine, liquor, whatever it is, make sure to go check out Macadoodles. Get tasting centers. They got all kinds of events and tastings that they have all the time, so make sure to check that out. Appreciate their partnership. And we've got a special guest joining us. Not the first time he's been on 21 Questions, but it's been a while since you and I have done it together. Mr. Mike DeVito, former Chiefs and Jets defensive lineman, who's one of the best dudes I ever covered. And I am excited to talk a little Chiefs football, a little NFL football with you today, Mike. How goes it?
Man, BJ, it's going great, brother. I'm a little bit self-conscious, man. You look great. The hair looks good. Like I'm bald and just going downhill, brother. But doing well. Thanks for having me on, man.
I appreciate that. You just gassed me up a little bit before we get the show started. Get me feeling good about myself.
That's the truth.
So I appreciate
you. That's the truth.
All right, let's get into these questions again. This is 21 Questions. This is the first time you're listening to the show. These questions have been submitted through our Discord channel, so you can be a part of our Discord by being a paid subscriber to the KCSN Daily Substack newsletter. Just $30 a year. You get more than 300 newsletters sent straight to your email inbox for only $30. Some of the best Chiefs content you can find, film breakdowns, all kinds of stuff. And we've got a community of, I think it's just over 500 people that are constantly communicating, chat rooms inside the Discord, kind of a cool little community in there. But these questions are coming through the Discord, in case you were wondering where they come from. Let's get going with the questions. And this first one is from LReed3760. And Mike, we'll both answer this one. It's just, who's going to be the offensive and defensive rookie of the year this year? We're just going to get the offensive one out of the way. I think there's only real two options that it could be for the Chiefs this year, considering it's only two skill position players for the Chiefs who are rookies who might get on the field. I don't believe Wanya Morris, the offensive tackle, is going to win rookie of the year for the Chiefs. So you're looking at either the undrafted rookie, Denarik Prince, the running back, or Rashee Rice, the wide receiver out of SMU. I'm going to go with Rashee Rice out of SMU because he was drafted high, and he's the only skill position player who might fit that mold. On the defensive side, Mike, a few more options there. Obviously, a big one, and hopefully we're talking about Felix Anudike-Uzomah being that for the Chiefs, but kind of how do you see that playing out?
Yeah, I think with Uzomah being drafted as high as he is, that's sort of the name that you hope for, right? I mean, that's the pressure and the weight that comes being with the first round draft pick. But I'll tell you what, having broken down the film on Coburn, the defensive tackle out of Texas, I'll tell you, man, I can't believe he got drafted in the sixth round. Because when I think about that, when I was coming out, I was an undrafted free agent. So you know, basically, you know, sixth, seventh round undrafted free agents. So a lot of those guys are on the same, you know, skill set, same skill level. I was nowhere near as, I mean, he was fun to watch when we broke him down with Craig and DJ, on DJ's show. I was just like, wow, he's really good. I can't believe he went to the sixth round. So, yeah. As much as we want the first round pick to be that guy, I wouldn't be surprised if Colbert's in the mix, you know, as we get towards the end of the season.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a fun one. I think BJ Thompson, I think he might be a year or two away in development. But you look at just talent, athletic profile, you can't find guys who move and bend and just have acceleration like that at that point in the draft. So he could be a fun one to watch. Like I said, it may take him a little bit while to develop. And then Shamari Connor is the other one, just because of his versatility, that you can do a lot of different things with him, that if it clicks for him mentally of what Steve Spagnuolo would ask him to do at all the different places he's going to be lining up, he could be another valuable piece that does some fun things. Another question, we'll stay with L. Reed 3760, because this is a popular question that I think everybody that covers the Chiefs have been talking about for the last couple of months. And if you were GM, what would a Chris Jones extension look like, knowing you have some young players that are going to get new contracts soon? Mike, I'll say it kind of falls into to the market. You know, it depends where the market lies. Right now, it's looking anywhere between, depends upon Quinnen Williams, the Jets star defensive lineman, when he gets his contract. Based on the reports, he's looking at between $25 and $30 million a year, then with guarantees upwards of $90 to $100 million. Aaron Donald has set the market at $31 million a year. You know, De'Ron Payne just signed for, I believe, $22.5 million a year. So you'd expect Chris Jones to be somewhere between De'Ron Payne and what Quinnen Williams is looking for is that $25 to $30, but not quite to where Aaron Donald is.
Yeah.
And so, no, you're not a cap guy, but just how do you see this playing out? And as a player, as a teammate in the locker room, when players are going through this and your teammates, and especially guys that are in the room with you, how do you handle that? Like, do you have conversations with guys, or does this stuff just not come up?
Yeah, it doesn't come up that much, but because you want to let the business stuff sort of handle itself, and you don't want to get involved in guys' business. So it's a little bit of a touchy subject. At the same time, you are sort of on pins and needles when you have a guy like Chris Jones with an uncertain future down the line, because given, you know, his production and the type of playmaker he is. Gosh, I know, it's just, this is such a hard team. You know, if anybody can figure out how to do this, because you're right. I mean, you have to pay him. I would take Chris Jones over Quinnen Williams.
Oh, sure.
You know, I mean, I think you're talking about Aaron Donald and Chris Jones at the top. So you have to pay him somewhere upwards of that amount. And, you know, when you have a team like this, there's so many guys that are, you know, that deserve the sort of top of their pay grade. So
yeah,
it's tough. You know, when you have somebody like Patrick Mahomes, he's the guy that's winning you games, right? So obviously Chris Jones makes a massive difference, and you want him as much as you can on the team. But, yeah, you know, if they stripped everybody out of there, but you still had Pat Mahomes, you still have a chance to win the Super Bowl. I mean, that's how good he is at that position. But I don't know. I mean, I know what he deserves. He deserves to be paid at the top.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of layers to this, and it's not like any one point is any. There's 100 different variables that go into these things happening or not happening, or why they should happen, why they shouldn't happen, and the fallout if it doesn't happen. And I will say, and the Chiefs have been good about this, but I know one thing that is important to them, and you always see it with good teams, is the message that it sends the young guys in the locker room by taking care of a guy like Chris financially.
Yeah, that's stepped a good
in,
point.
It's worked hard, done everything. He said he's matured a lot since he came into the league. He's become a leader in that way, and that it tells guys like Keandre Coburn, it tells guys that are coming up through this system, that if you do all of the right things and you prove to be one of the best players in the league, we will take care of you. And that way the money, the extensions go to guys who are in that room. Every once in a while you pay big money to a guy outside.
Right.
But what do you tell the three or four players lined up for deals when you keep going outside to bring in mercenaries? You call them to pay them from the outside to come in and fix your problems.
Right.
Where you tell the guys, hey, you come in here, you're a part of this, we support you, we're a big family. You take care of your family. Chris Jones is part of that family. He's done everything you've asked him, turned into one of the best defensive players in the league, and then you go and reward him. This is all negotiations. It's all part of it. But I like the message that it sends to everybody coming into this organization. If you do the right things, you will get rewarded here.
Gosh, you know, BJ, and that's such a great point. I think I've been away from the game, the locker room for so long that you forget things like that. And you're exactly right. As a younger player, guy coming up in the system, to know that, hey, you know, the organization's going to take care of us. You know, we go out there and prove it, and they're gonna reward us for doing that. And they're not going to be bringing guys in from all over the place. That goes a long way in the locker room. You're 100% right. And I've been on teams where that was the case, and I've been on teams where that wasn't the case, and it does make a big difference. So absolutely, You've changed my mind. I think I'm on. You know, I was on paying him. You know, I'm for paying him, regardless. But definitely now at that point, it's a good point.
It's got to make sense for everybody. And the other thing that's got to make sense for, and this is stuff that doesn't get talked about publicly a lot, and again, not a huge piece of it, but just understanding the dynamics of the negotiations. Or who are the agents who were involved? Chris Jones' agent, the Katz brothers, Mike and Andy, like, they aren't the largest agency out there.
Yeah.
And this is not a knock, so not taking any kind of disrespect in any kind of way. I'd like them, respect them, they've taken care of me, have a relationship with those guys. But they're not a huge agency, so if they don't get Chris, who is one of the best defensive players in the league, a top-tier deal, every other agent in the league will be using that against them when they start recruiting the seniors in college, the juniors coming out now, that they couldn't get Chris Jones paid. And so when players are coming up on deals and there's negotiating, if it's Drew Rosenhaus doesn't need to get his next guy the absolute best deal because he's proven he's got the resume of all the guys he's taken care of.
Right.
Doesn't necessarily happen that way with new young agents that have to prove and kind of make their way and say, like, you come to me, I will get you taken care of, like, the best agents and the best players in this league.
Right.
They know that. His agents know if we don't get him this top-end deal, it's going to be used against us when we try to recruit the next Chris Jones 2, 3, 4 years down the road. And they don't forget that. They used everything they can to negotiate. And so that's something the Chiefs are aware of, too.
That's another fantastic point, BJ. You're exactly right. Again, another sort of line of reasoning that I didn't even think about. I mean, that's a really good point. And just for Chris's sake, I mean, he's earned it. You know what I mean? Like, he shouldn't want anything less than the top anyway, because he's earned that. So, but yeah, no, that's a great point. Very good point.
All right, let's move on to a few more questions. And this one is from Julian Sale. Which UDFAs do you want to make the roster or practice squad, and which UDFAs are most likely to make roster or practice squad? This is a tough one because they haven't really played yet much. Yeah, the rookie minicamp, which is just kind of a mess.
Nobody knows
what they're doing. I think, to go back, Denaric Prince, I think the running back, I think he's at Tulsa. I think he's got a great chance just because I know they got Jerick McKinnon back. Obviously, Isaiah Pacheco is the guy. But there's an opportunity there for a young running back. We've seen in the past, whether it's starting on the practice squad and then moving their way up. We saw that with Sharkhandrick West, the guy that you played with, guy that I'm close with. Saw it with Spencer Ware when they picked him up on that reserve futures deal when he was out of the league, finishing up with Seattle back before he got his opportunity. And so running back is an opportunity there for a young player to kind of jump up out of nowhere. Some of the positions, offensive line, there's a lot of numbers there already. Receiver, there's a lot of numbers there already. It's got to shake out who kind of earns the spots, a fascinating position. But that's a tough one. I don't know if there's a path to really any of the UDFAs, again, outside of Denaric Prince, that I would say right now have a good chance of making. There's some talent, Truman Jones, Cam Jones, there's some talented guys that they signed. But there's some guys ahead of them that are also young that are developing.
Yeah, you know, I haven't kept up with the undrafted free agents this year. I should have. What I will say, having been an undrafted free agent, is I'm rooting for all those guys because I don't know how the hell you make a team nowadays, given how restricted the timing is for the time is for these guys to be in the facility and doing so. I'm telling you, BJ, when I first got going, I was 12 hours a day during OTAs. We were there. I mean, I had 9 days off for the summer, 2 days all training camp. I mean, you had so much more time. It was harder, but you had so much more time to learn and grow and develop as a player. These guys basically have to come in and be playing at the level of a veteran right away if they're going to contribute, or else they have no chance. And so,
I only saw one way. I know you played for multiple teams, but the one thing that always stood out to me about the way that people talked that either were with different teams that then signed with the Chiefs or coaches who had been in other places is how quick and how efficient Andy Reid's practices are. Mm-hmm. That if you don't know what you're doing, they don't slow things down for you. And if they re-huddle like more than once during a practice, like the second time they all re-huddle, he's going to say something and it's about as mad as he would ever get. At least I would see during the offseason. Rookie minicamp is a test of patience for the entire coaching staff because nobody knows what's going on. These kids don't know what to do.
Right.
But you get to OTAs, the young guys mixing in with veterans who know what they're doing. When a receiver runs to the wrong spot or lines up the wrong way, you can't not know what you're doing. And mentally, those guys are just deer in the headlights for like months. They don't know what they're doing.
On average, Andy Reid's, a period during, a team period during OTAs or training camp, usually there are some exceptions, usually about 10 plays. And it breaks down to about 5, 3, and 2, right? The first team gets 5, second team gets 3, and then the third team gets, so like, you got, those guys have 2 reps, period, maybe, to make the team. And that's in OTAs and training camp. This is a hard league to prove yourself in as a guy coming in undrafted. And so I'm rooting hard for all those guys because I wouldn't have played the NFL in this NFL. I wouldn't have been able to make the team. I wasn't good enough. The way I was able to get a foot up was we had so much time to learn and grow, and I was able to develop. If I didn't have that, there was no chance I wouldn't have played.
Yeah. We've got a couple of questions coming up from friend of the program, huge supporter of KCSN, Grayson Jaspers. We'll get to those right after this quick break.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Make sure you download our new app. Find it on the App Store or Google Play. Just search KC Sports Network.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
Hey, what's up? BJ Kissel hanging out with Mike DeVito on 21 questions for this week. Mike, we've got a couple questions from Grayson Jaspers. First question, who will be this year's Leo Chanel, as in the guy who gets a spike in snaps as you get into the playoffs and particularly the Super Bowl? Who's a young player that you could see maybe spiking some of those reps?
Yeah, that's a good question. That is a good question. You know who I'd like to, I know our offensive line is solidified in certain areas. Remind me of the, I'm terrible with names, BJ, the player that we drafted last year from, was it Kentucky, the offensive lineman?
Darian Kennard?
Yeah, I want to see him. He looks like looking at him last year, he's a big, nasty dude. Yeah. And what is
he? Duke Miniweather guy.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. And he has that, what was he, the best blocker in the SEC, I think it was, coming out, like the top-rated run blocker in the SEC.
He's a physical dude.
Yeah, I like, yeah. I like guys like that. And they already have that up front, right? I mean, they already have guys that are big, nasty guys. I think you add him into the mix. So the guy we got from Jacksonville, where is he playing? He's playing right back?
Who knows at this point?
Okay.
It's the messaging that got weird because they pay him like a left tackle. He's only played right tackle in the NFL. They said he's athletic enough to play left tackle and he could play over there. But then you're drafting Wanya. You've got Donovan Smith, who are left tackles. So, like, all I wanted to avoid was putting a guy left tackle who's only played right tackle and then putting a guy right tackle who's only played left tackle. I was like, what are we doing here? It's not like it was 20 years ago with the blind side and where the guys rush from, and now with the fronts being on multiple, like all the different things that people do. Put people where they're comfortable, but I'm not going to pretend to know more than Andy Heck does.
Yeah, no, no doubt. Yeah, no, they're in good hands.
It's weird to me. Yeah.
If anybody can get them to figure it out, it's Andy Heck. So yeah, given the sort of variability there, I'm not sure how it's going to play out, but I would like to say Kennard do. I'd like to see what he gets in year two. He's had the reps. He's starting to master the offense to now let him, I'm sure the game's slowing down a little bit for him. And when you've got a guy that plays with that violence and that nastiness, that's what, once the game slows down, now he can be who he really wants to be out there. So, go ahead. Sorry.
Those are the guys that you need to be ready to go. Because if there's an injury to like Trey Smith, Kennard plays inside. I know he played tackle, I believe. Could be sliding inside. If Trey Smith gets injured, you need guys to step up and be ready to go. The player I was thinking was Shamari Corner, the rookie defensive back, because one thing with Steve Spagnuolo, and I know the lab guys talk about this a lot, and it's kind of known now about Spags, is that he likes to, early in the season, kind of do a little bit of everything, and the defenses are kind of all over the place from week to week. Yeah. And then the later in the season he gets, he really starts to hone in on what they're successful with, and they just kind of lean into that, where all of a sudden their defenses get better. Well, for a player like Shamari Connor, who can play kind of that, not the same level, so I'm not comparing them as players, but from a versatility standpoint, kind of what Tyrann Mathieu. He plays some nickel, could play some safety, he can move around, do some different things. You're going to deal with a young player with a defensive coordinator who early in the season likes to throw a lot at people. You start to hone in on what these guys can do. If they get enough snaps, we saw with the group last year, as much as those rookies were playing, especially the DBs, you get another versatile guy in there that can blitz, can come off the edge, who can blitz from the nickel spot, can do different things with him in coverage. Playmaking type defensive back. I would love to see him get a player like that get some more snaps, but I know he's got some competition out there. Let's move on. Grayson Jasper, second question. I want to ask you about this because you played with a few of these guys. Who is this year's Darius Fountain in the preseason? And I'm going to make the assumption that it's just a player in the preseason that just puts up a ton of numbers because they're getting a lot of reps, a lot of snaps. Justin Ross is kind of been the guy, Mike. I don't know how much you followed this, but Chiefs fans, and it's probably NFL fans in general, you always fall in love with that new skill position guy that hasn't quite, the young player who hasn't earned it yet, but has all the talent in the world. And you kind of prop them up a little bit before they've earned it. Hmm. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but you put maybe unrealistic expectations. I think there are Chiefs fans out there that think Justin Ross is the number three receiver for the team right now.
Yeah.
And kind of tongue-in-cheek, but honestly kind of serious for some of the fans, the way that he's just been discussed. Over the years, we saw it, your first year, I believe it was Mark Harrison, and then it was a Ross Travis. And nothing against the player, was not their fault. They just got propped. The fans saw a couple highlights, and all of a sudden there's unrealistic expectations. My guy was Kenny Cook, who I believe was there at the same time. I loved his story, loved everything about him, excelled in the offseason. And then as soon as he got to the season, put the pads on, everything just changes. It's a little bit faster. It's a little bit more intense. For me, I believe that Justin Ross is going to be that guy because I think he's going to get a lot of reps. He needs to prove that he can play special teams, that he can understand where to be on every concept that they call routes and play that they call. They have to trust that he'll be in the right spot, but he's my guy. Do you have a player that you kind of are excited to see in the preseason, a young player to step up? Do you have any stories of players that you've played with, not to be disrespectful about it, but just that just absolutely tore it up, that whether due to injury or just lack of opportunity, you felt like maybe got not the short end of the stick, but that could have done more, that you just saw look absolutely phenomenal that never got that chance?
Yeah. I had a few of those years in my career where I had, I had a great preseason and then just sort of was average during the regular season. It is, you know, I guess I'll just speak broadly. I don't want to say, you know, I'm going to pick a certain player, things like that. The thing is, preseason. The preseason games are not anywhere near the level of the regular season. I know that's an obvious thing, but nobody's game planning really. Yeah. There's no teams are running the same exact plays. In fact, one way that I used to get an advantage on a team, if we were playing on the preseason, you know, nobody would watch film. So I would go in, and what I would do is I would watch that team's first preseason or whatever game we were playing. Say it's the first preseason game of the year. Watch their first preseason game from last year. And those are the exact same plays you're going to get, because you know that's where that offensive coordinator is, given the sort of install of their offense. And so sometimes preseason can be a very hard tell as far as, you know, where a guy's talents and abilities are, because there are some special, there are some ways you can take advantage of the fact that it's the preseason. And, you know, as an older guy, I remember just thinking, we just got to get this done. Let's wrap this up. You know, there's not a serious thing. So, but yeah, no. And, you know, so remind me, BJ, how do they do it now with the, they got rid of the fourth preseason game. So is it the third preseason game that all the rookies play the whole game?
Kind of. Everybody does it a little bit differently now that there's just three. But it's going to be, and I think that's where like the roster numbers start to change, because they have all the cutdowns and they still have that third game. Do you have to put your starters out there, guys you don't want playing, but you still have to field a football game?
Yeah.
And you're still selling tickets. You're still putting it on television. Like, guys still have to play their actual positions that are out there. All of a sudden it becomes a numbers game. And I think that's why, like, the coaches, there's been this back and forth on how many games are we playing? When are the roster cut deadlines coming down?
Right.
As much as it is about giving more guys opportunities, it's also about not forcing guys that you don't want to get hurt to have to play in that last game because you've already had a cutdown before that. So,
well, and that's as a rookie, like my rookie year as an undrafted free agent and as a young guy, that was the game that you proved yourself, right? And what was nice about that game was there was no starters, no veterans, really. And everybody that was on that field was trying to make their team. So everybody was going 100 miles an hour. I mean, that game was just, you know, violent. And so that, again, another thing I feel bad for, because that's one of those games that you can really hone in and say, oh, yeah, look at what this guy has. You know what I mean? Look what he's got. He was able to get out there and everybody's going nuts, going 100 million miles an hour, not like the veterans in the first three games. And they're going out there and proving themselves. I mean, that's how I was able to make the team my rookie year, was I had a great fourth game, you know?
I enjoyed the fourth preseason game, and not just because those guys trying to make a team, but a lot of those guys, and I think to some extent, like a lot of them probably knew in the back of their minds that this may be the last football game I ever play, and that they put all that time in. And then I had a different perspective, because I was staying, like when I was with the Chiefs, I was staying on the sideline watching you guys, the veterans who like weren't playing in those games, get genuinely excited for the young guys.
Yeah.
You probably knew like they weren't going to make the team, but you were fired up to watch those guys go make plays and celebrate on an NFL field. And like, I just got to appreciate it. And I also knew on the fourth preseason game, I on the sideline doing the TV stuff was going to be very busy, because it's like, we want 15 player interviews. And you couldn't do them in the first half. The rule was that had to be in the second half. So you guys getting done, you knew your day was done. I was like, I'm coming over like, hey, Brad, can you grab Mike? Like,
yeah, question. That's right.
I got three questions for him. And then I would ask one, there'd be a touchdown behind me. I had no idea what to do. Producer Ryan Gallen, producer yelling
at you.
Me. Yeah. You know how hard it is to ask questions. I think you were one of the first people that interviewed. You and Jeff were always so good about it, because I had zero experience with an IFB and did not know how to function by talking and listening to somebody and having somebody talk in my ear and comprehend what the person, because what would happen, I would completely lose track of what the person I was interviewing actually said.
That's right.
There were times I would transition out of it thinking, oh my God, if they just said something super personal or funny, and I just completely ignore it because I'm trying to listen to what the guy in my ear is telling.
BJ, when I first retired, I did color commentary for the University of Maine, and it was the same thing, right? You'd be sitting there and it'd be, you know, the play-by-play guy would say it and I would get ready to say something. And then all of a sudden the producer would come on and be talking while I was trying to talk. And every time I would stop, because I would think everybody's hearing what that guy, you know, what he's saying. So I would just stop talking. Finally, I quit. I was like, I'm done. After one season, I was like, I can't do this. I can't
It's funny to go back and watch now because I can tell. If you ever saw me doing a player review, if I ever looked at the camera and just did like a blank stare, he said something in my ear I didn't appreciate. So I was not clear for anything. So I was looking at the camera like, yeah, just real quick. And just be like, that's it. Please stop telling me that. We're going to screw this broadcast up.
That's right.
I'm going to make an idiot out of myself any more than I was already trying not to. All right, let's move on to the next questions. We have got quite a few. Some silly ones. Let's do a couple fun ones here. It's actually Grayson Jaspers. It's a would you rather.
Okay.
For the Chiefs this season. Would you rather hold Tyreek Hill in that game against the Dolphins, which is over in Germany, to less than 25 yards receiving?
Okay.
Or sack Joe Burrow twice in our game and have whoever sacked him beat Orlando Brown Jr. for both of those sacks?
Oh,
it's kind of like a bop in a former player a little bit. Would you rather Tyreek under 25 or two sacks against OBJ?
Yeah, I like OBJ. I would want to, I don't know if this is the most optimal thing for the, you know, given the situation for the team, but I would say, I would prefer to hold Tyreek Hill to 25. I like OBJ. I want him to do well. I like him a lot.
In the regular season, I would definitely say under the 25 yards, but from like a strategic standpoint, I like holding Tyreek under 25 yards. Again, Tyreek could have 180 yards and the Chiefs are still going to win that game. We sacked Joe Burrow twice because OBJ gets beat. There's a better chance we win, and that's going to be an important game. But that's overthinking what's a silly question. So not having as much fun, but I would agree. I think holding Tyreek for as much trash talk is going to be happening during and leading up to it. You're not going to see that a lot with Burrow. You're not going to see it a lot with OBJ. May say a few things, not anything close to like what Tyreek's going to
do. He's a little bit loud. He's a little bit loud.
He's having fun with it. He's having some fun. All right, here's one from Matthew McNabb. There's a report out there that Chase Young might be traded from Washington. At what price would you be willing to trade for him? Put your GM hat on. Like, what would you be willing to give up for a player like Chase Young? A little different now because, I mean, you've got George Karlaftis, you've got Felix, so you've already got basically two guys that you've two first-round picks over the last 2 years. So it might be a little different, but I guess in theory, what would you be willing to give up for a player like Chase Young?
Yeah, I mean, he's a game-changing type guy. I don't know. I would, you know, honestly, you love the rookie, the first-round pick. You want him to do well, but
yeah,
I guess as a veteran, I would prefer to have a guy who's tried and true, who's proven he can do it in the league. But what would you give up? I don't know. What do you think, BJ, a second-round pick?
I don't know about the compensation. I just one or the other. Either if you give up a low pick and a lot of money, that's okay. It's giving up both that it's tough. And people are going to immediately think about Frank Clark. You gave up a first-round pick and you paid a lot of money. It's just nothing is guaranteed. And I know it's a cliche throwaway line, but you can't guarantee anybody that you trade for is going to work out. It could roll an ankle or just have some sort of fluke injury that derails everything. That when you give up resources for the cap, the money that you give up, and the picks, it puts way too much pressure to where you can only do just enough to make it worth it. You can't say that was a phenomenal deal if you give up a really high draft, but give up a future first and you give up a max type deal. There's really no living going beyond what you just did. Like you can only hit it. You can't supersede what you want as far as value goes.
Well, and how much better is he than Frank Clark, you think?
He's younger. He's healthier. I guess coming into it, he was healthier. He's obviously been banged up in the league. But at this point, I'm not sure I would give up much. If this question was asked before the draft, obviously the answer would be different.
Yeah.
I like your thought of would I like him on the team? Absolutely. Would I be willing to give up a top 50, top 60 pick, a first or second round pick for him, plus the money that you're going to have to give him? No. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't give up a second round pick for a 1 year rental that then you play around with the franchise tag of the future. You've got two young guys, develop those guys.
Yeah.
Bring Frank back. I'd love to bring Frank back or Carlos Dunn. Bring another veteran that can mix into that room.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Work with the younger guys. Like, that's a better plan for me. I always bring as much talent as you can.
That's why I brought up Frank Clark, because I think, you know, why not just bring him back? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I anybody who's ever heard anything that I've said over the last 2 years knows how I feel about Frank Clark.
Yeah.
So we can do that. All right. Here's a question from Nick Johnson. Mike, do you have any hobbies that you threw yourself into after retirement?
Yeah, I am. I'm kind of a nerd. I decided.
You're an academic. Is it academic? I guess you can call it a nerd. I just say you're an academic.
I'm a nerd. That's my wife calls me a nerd. So, I jumped into the academic world, and I have 2 master's degrees in philosophy, and I'm about to finish up my PhD in philosophy. So, yeah, I jumped into the books and writing and studying, and I enjoy it. Philosophy is similar to football in the sense that it's very competitive, right? It's a lot about trying to win arguments and there's different techniques and debating and things like that. So that's why, I wanted to see what I could do with my mind and how I was able to do with my body. I was seeing, how far can I get with my mind? And so that's why I decided to do this. But it did have, there is some parallel between football and philosophy. And so I've enjoyed it. It's kept me sane, you know?
You've been published a couple times. I've seen the stuff that you've posted on Facebook. It's well beyond what my tiny little brain can.
Oh, you would get it.
With the stuff that you're writing, you're not giving yourself enough credit. 2 master's degrees. It's pretty impressive.
Thank you, BJ.
What you've been doing and the stuff that you do. And our fearless producer, Mr. Jordan Foote, has informed us that Chase Young has a $10.99 million cap hit, and he's entering the last year of his deal. And so maybe I'd give up a mid-round pick. Whatever I'd be willing to give up is not what they would take for a player of his caliber.
Right.
I would give up a 4th-round pick for a 1-year rental at $10 million for a player like that.
Right.
And even if he's the starter and make Felix or Karlaftis a situational pass rusher, Mick Small in, I wouldn't give up more than that for a 1-year rental and then play around with the franchise tag down there. I don't play those games. I wouldn't do anything like that.
Yeah, and going back to the Chris Jones thing, like this is my initial thought was, these guys obviously deserve it. But when you have Patrick Mahomes, he's the guy that's going to, he's the guy that's winning you games. He's going to get you the Super Bowl. You remember the year that Justin Houston tied the sack record and we went 9-7. You know what I mean? So like, it's great to have those guys. And the more, Chris Jones is different. I mean, he makes key plays in key situations. So don't get me wrong. But again, you make it to these games with Mahomes doing what he does. And I think if you could put an average defense out there, if you can hold the team to 25, 30 points a game, you're going to win because KC going to put 45, 50 up, So that makes it a little bit easier when you're thinking through these things is like, all right, well, we have Mahomes. So there's no super pressure to get a pass rusher or something like that because, he's the guy.
Yeah. All right, more with Mike DeVito. We got a couple personal questions for Mike. We got a couple fun ones to end this episode. We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to KC Sports Network. We'll be right back after this. Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
I promise, Mike, I have nothing to do with this question being submitted.
I love it.
I'm curious your answer. You're too nice. You're going to give an answer that I can kind of expect anyway.
Okay.
But this is from Christian Gumminger, the wonderful Christian who helps us out and runs our KCSN Foundation and all the things that we do, giving back to the community. Shout out Christian. He asks, for DeVito, when you were playing, how excited were teammates to go and do press conferences or segments with the in-house team reporter with BJ? Did you guys hate it or did you love it? Try to be as honest as you can.
Yeah, no, I will be honest. BJ, I'm doing this, and I've been doing this with you for the past few years because of who you are, and in two different ways. First off, how talented you are, but also the way you treated us as players. And I really enjoyed sitting down. Like when you and I are talking, whether it be in an interview when I was playing or doing this stuff, sometimes I forget that we're recording because it's just nice to sit down and have a conversation with you. And so, the thing that's, it's always this way, I would think, with in-house reporters is that they're going to be a little bit easier on you than when you, are dealing with beat writers and things like that who are trying to get a story, right? The in-house guy is going to angle, the angle of the interviews is going to be towards the positive. But BJ, you did it at a higher level. Again, both at your craft, you were clearly very good at your craft, but then also the type of person you were was easy from day one to see, oh yeah, this dude is different. And so again, that's why it was easy to jump in to what you're doing here. And I'm not surprised by the success that we're having because we have you in charge. And so, that's all true. I would love to make it more negative to be more honest, but I'm being totally honest. You know, that's the way.
Yeah. I'll say the one thing that I felt like I was always good at. I always respected the player's time. I don't know if that was because I played sport. I didn't play professionally, but I played baseball in college. Like I understood very quickly was the time commitment, the effort that you guys put into what you did. So I became like fiercely protective. You know, get fiercely annoyed at the comments that you'd see on social. Like, these guys don't care. They just make a bunch of money. They don't care about this. I'm like, fucker, I sat and watched these guys get on and off a plane. I sat there at training camp and watched what they went through. It was at every workout. Like, I know what these guys put into this. It's like, don't come to me with that. Like, I wouldn't take that very well. But the other thing, like, I was always respectful of your time. Didn't want to chit chat. But the one thing I'll say that I feel like in-house reporters kind of get the benefit of the doubt, or it's a little easier to talk to us because, and not all of them are like this. And I don't mean this because I'm friends with beat writers, like close with those guys, understand the work that they put in, how hard that job is too. But if you're talking to a scrum or you're talking to a beat writer one-on-one, and you say something and it just, you mix the words up or it comes out the wrong way, or you say it, and then once it's transcribed and it's read, the context could be read a lot of different ways. Where I've sat in those pressers and somebody said something, you don't think anything of it. And then all of a sudden there's like this juicy headline and you're like, that's not what happened. And then you read it and you're like, well, that's what he said, but that is not the context of what happened. With the in-house reporter, you never have to worry about saying something wrong. And so you guys in general were more comfortable because you weren't thinking, I have to say this not a way that could be taken the wrong way. Whereas when you talk to me, it's like, if it comes out wrong, I know the context of what you meant. I know the spirit of what you meant. You don't have to worry about that with me.
Let me tell you a funny story. When I was with the Jets my last year, 2012, and there was this reporter who I consider a close friend. I mean, I like him a lot, but he, you know, in New York, the reporting's tough. I mean, those guys, it's tough.
Well, they're in Kansas City.
Yeah, well, and to your point, so this reporter had asked me, he said, Tim Tebow was on the team and didn't get a lot of chance to play. And I, you know, he said, what did you think of Tim Tebow? And I said, oh, I would have liked to see, Tim's a great leader. It would have been nice to see him out there more. He did a good job. And I think he's a good, you know, and it got spun. And I feel like I remember it being a headline, like, DeVito thinks Jets would have won more games if Tebow would have played. Like, it was totally spun. Like, I had said, oh, the coaches were wrong. We should have played Tebow. I was like, bro, that's not what I said. That's not what I said.
And a lot of times it's the editors who set the headlines, not the beat writers. So the beat writer writes a story, and all of a sudden the headline is like, wait a second. And then the beat writer gets called in, and they're like, hey, I didn't do that. I'll never forget, it was OTAs one year. Eric Fisher, because Andy Reid does this. Five guys will start, and then he'll mix in a bunch of dudes because you have during the season, guys need a rep next to the other guys just so you can learn how to communicate, because inevitably something's going to happen during the season. You got to get out there. That Fisher had taken a rep with like a third team as they were mixing guys in. And then there was a headline the next day. It's like, Eric, former number one pick, demoted to third team. And it was like the middle of May. Like, I read it. I'm like, what are we doing here? He's the first team left tackle out there. Practice every day.
Yeah, right.
Like a couple of reps with the third team because they were just mixing guys up. And all of a sudden, headline. And then everybody thinks. And then Fish responds the way that anybody would respond to that and be like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, right.
And so it, again, was never my job to fight false narratives. Something it took me a while to learn that it's like, how do you just let people say these things and you know they're not true? That's all you would do if you were chasing that kind of stuff around. But yeah, that's an interesting one. And I loved getting to know the player. I felt like my job was the conduit between the fans and the players. And the more that we could humanize the players, the stronger the connection would be. If you're a Chiefs fan and you feel like you know Mike DeVito a little bit better because of something that we did, a conversation we had, a story that I wrote, that fandom and that connection becomes so much stronger when there's an emotional component to it, because you feel like you know them as people and not just guys wearing a jersey with a number and a team that you like to root for. And that's part of that job that I took very, very seriously. All right, a couple more questions. And oh, here's a good one. Who's the Mike DeVito comp in today's NFL? Who is a player that you watch and you're like, that's kind of like, I was.
Oh, the you said the overweight, unathletic, awkward, goofy white dude. Let me see.
I'll put it a different way. The rock solid, run stuffing defensive guy who was last couple of years intentionally lost some weight to try to be a little bit more agile in the running game. In the pass rush game. And he came in that last year, you had lost some weight. Like, you were skinny. And I'm like, you were going to be a pass rush fiend. You're like, I'm just trying to stay on the field, BJ.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah, it's hard. The game has changed so much. I mean, again, this is another reason why it would be hard for me to be on a team in this NFL is, you know, when you're – so, BJ, you're building a team, right? You've got to compete with Mahomes. Let's say that you're in the AFC. Mahomes, Josh Allen, now Aaron Rodgers, Burrow, right? You're not saying, boy, let's go get a – running back and let's get, you know, let's run, we're gonna run power and ISO and all these things. You know, you can't compete with that. So I came into the league at a time when even Tom Brady in his prime was running, you know, their main groups for the Patriots were 13 personnel, 12 personnel, 22 personnel, and they were running the football. And that was how I was able to sort of carve out a niche for myself. That's not the case anymore. So Saunders from last year, the D tackle, who went to New Orleans. He was me, but like 2.0, because what did he have? 5 or 6 sacks? I mean,
he can run.
Yeah. I mean, so, but like, he's a guy that you plug in and stop the run. He's a bigger, good guy, good technique. And I think Coburn fits this mold too. But even when you watch Coburn, I mean, watching him, playing college, some of those reps, I mean, he was beating blocks and making TFLs in the back, tackles in the backfield. You know, I didn't have, that just wasn't me, right? I was going to stay on the line of scrimmage, take on double teams, you know, try to keep the scoop block from getting up to DJ. And then in the pass rush, you know, it was ugly at times. I mean, it just wasn't me. So guys like me, you know, I don't know if you remember like a name like Kelly Gregg, who has played for Kansas City. He was very much of that mold.
He's the Ravens for a long time, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was with the Ravens for a long time. So, that's just the league has changed so much that there really isn't many guys that you wouldn't want to have a guy like me out there.
I mean, 53 Mike DeVitos.
Yeah, you'd have a good locker room. You'd have a good locker room, but you might not have a very good team. Not nowadays.
All right, let's go to the last question. We'll end this one on a fun one. Appreciate everybody for hanging out. This from Zach Forrickle McFortson. I don't know. You know, if you're listening to this, Zach, you knew I tried to pronounce your name. I can't pronounce names. If you were doing roomie assignments at St. Joe for the KCSN staff, who are you pairing up together as character building exercises? So all of you I'm going to jump in here first, give you a second, because I wanted a second question about training camp roommates, if we got any fun stories from camp. I will say the one combination is that Matty Lane and Tucker Franklin could not have a room together, because that would be ridiculous. Like, those two together in Vegas during the Shrine Bowl was ridiculous.
I feel like
he was in parades with a bunch of Golden Knights people, and Tucker had a freaking margarita frozen drink that was taller than he was, and he was rip swimming random people as we were walking down the strip in Las Vegas, like, where I was pass rush moves. Just walk around and just rip swim everybody. So Maddie and Tucker could not room together at camp. Those two always meet everything, and it'd be a mess.
You know, thinking about myself, like, rooming with Craig would be cool. I feel like he's a cerebral dude. I think I'd like to pick his brain. Engineer guy, like, obviously,
brilliant.
Smart dude. So I'd like to.
That's a good fit.
Yeah. But I also would like to room with Tucker, because I just feel like I would just want a front row seat to those crazy beers.
Seltzer reviews.
The seltzer reviews. Yeah.
Now,
those look so bad. Those look just terrible across the board. So I'd like that. I mean, that'd be fun. We should do something like that.
I think Tucker would be the most requested roommate. I got a request. Like, everybody would pick Tucker.
He's the Dustin Colquitt of KCSN. You know what I mean?
I was just talking to him yesterday.
Well, he's one of us too. So Dustin's on the team. Yeah, I'd want a room. Yeah, Dustin or DJ, that would be fun to room with those guys.
You got pranks left and right.
You do. Dustin would be on.
Dustin could give an entire podcast series on all the pranks that he did. Maybe there's statute of limitations. He can share some of them publicly now that he did. He did some messed up stuff.
Every time I would go in my room after, we get in for the night, I'm looking under my bed, looking under my closet, making sure there's not a video camera. So somebody hiding underneath my bed, because I'm like, Dustin's going to get everybody. Frogs in the bathroom. I mean, that dude, I don't know where he came up with all those ideas, but
that's funny. Those are some of the ones you can share. Some of the other ones, we'll let Dustin speak.
Dustin will bring it up. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We appreciate it, buddy, for hanging out. BJ Kistelet's Mike DeVito. This has been 21 questions. Please leave us a 5-star review if you enjoyed what you heard. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit like and subscribe and go ahead and follow us. Make sure you don't miss anything. We'll continue having consistent content throughout OTAs as we get ready for training camp and get set for the 2023 NFL season. Mike, we'll let you take us home, but we appreciate everybody for hanging out.
Yeah, love you, Chiefs Kingdom. Thank you, BJ. Thanks for having me on, brother.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard and think others would as well. You can find all 6 of our channels at KCSN, covering the Chiefs, the Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou, by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.